Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, chairpersons of the two entities of the year, CEOs, colleagues. Chairperson, on the issue of the apology of the DG, I'm advised by my colleague Shoki that there was an apology tendered. I'm not sure when the Secretariat has received it, but we know that. Thank you for the opportunity to come and present the...
Just for the record, Nadia asked me as well that she did receive, but she did not print it out yesterday, the apology from the DG. Just for the record, sort of.
Chairperson, we have today presentations of the APB and budget, as I call it, corporate plan, from the Water Research Commission. the presentation by Lukumati Lusutu, Catchment Management Agency. I will propose that, without further delay, that we allow the chairperson of the Water Research Commission to commence by introducing her team, and we take that presentation, and then we do questions on that one, and then thereafter followed by the chairperson of the Lukumati Lusutu Agency. That suggestion is in order. I have no opening remarks to make, Chairperson.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee and the members of the department and the other entities. We would like to express our gratitude for the opportunity to present the WRC Recovery Plan for 2017-2018 and the annual performance plan. Before I introduce my team, I noticed that the hotel, Townhouse Hotel, where we're staying, that has given us instructions on how we can help them save water. There's a head story that I try to understand that in the context of progress, you must use it to collect the water while you shower. I could not quite figure out how that makes a difference to the bigger scheme of things. So I think in the water sector, we have a huge challenge in terms of finding innovative ways to manage our water resources. Because for a city like Cape Town to be telling us to be using buckets, that is, for me, a major source of concern. I would like to refer to the executive, CEO, will be making the presentation, and Senator Ismail, CFO, will be supporting him in that presentation. I also want to highlight that the WRC has now focused just the board and the
many external consultations with the shareholder and significant stakeholders elsewhere, and eventually that is formed as a final draft for the minister on the 31st of January. The structure of the WRFC, the only thing I want to emphasize here, the WRFC's team is divided into four branches. In the institution, there's an R&D branch, an impact and innovation branch, as well as a corporate services branch and a financial management branch, and this is how we do our business. And then a quick reminder on the core principles that guide the strategy. And these are important principles, particularly in the context of the discussion that happened yesterday on socioeconomic transformation in the system. Socioeconomic transformation and a new way of doing business insists that you have to do it in a way that catalyzes a much bigger product. And based on that, we have stuck to these five core principles in our previous and current and the plan for the next 5 years. The first is the investment in the multiplier effect, which means every investment that we make must result in more than one product. And every product that we look at must take into consideration all of the contributions before that and add value rather than duplicate and substitute. This is a very important principle. It's something that we generally stick to. There are occasions where duplication, of course, is necessary. But more often than not, it isn't. So the multiplier effect is actually quite core to the business that we do. The second is the concentration of knowledge around solutions development. You know, research institutions meet their objectives by providing new knowledge and producing new postgraduates, and this is important to do. But we need to go one step further than that. We need to organize that concentration of knowledge in the kind of way that shortens the distance. And this is a big critique, and this was a discussion in the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee yesterday, where we presented the National Council on Innovation, ATP, is that you have to concentrate the knowledge in a way that cuts the distance between the laboratory and practice. And this is something that we have committed to do, and some of the work that WRFC has done, together with its international partners, we actually have been quite groundbreaking. And we'll talk about that a little bit further. The third point is the diversification in the research philosophy. And this is a vitally important issue, because more and more, we don't have science and technology barriers around water management. We are hitting the barriers of the real issues associated with the social science arena around change in behavior and change in practice. And we're visiting the city, for example, which today I gather has 86 days of water left, and hopefully within that you will have the next rain. But the record in this city, as the record has been in many cities with the drought, is the big barrier has been around the behavior changes of the water use as opposed to the technological tools you need to do the behavior changes. The second last point is the issue around the important impact areas and the elevation of those areas, and the thing we call the inside the WRC the lighthouses, where these are areas of concentration, for example, ICT and water, to deal with the issues around the fourth industrial revolution very directly. Our new program on water quality and health, which has become a very high focus area both locally and globally. And the last point is the issue of partnerships. There is almost nothing that the WRC does completely on its own. Its minimum partners are the shareholders and the academic community. And more often than not, our projects involve the users themselves, the affected parties, and the people who have the possibility of taking those bits of knowledge, converting them into products to make direct contribution in the form of goods and services to the real economy. So towards technology, towards solutions, innovation, and impact, based on the production of these three things. The first is new knowledge. We are in the business of new knowledge, and we will not de-emphasize that. I mean, the community of practice in South Africa around new knowledge is quite powerful. It's a small community of practice in our universities and research institutes. We have a full-time equivalent of just on 2,500 people. And in spite of that, we rank 18th in the world in terms of paper production. To put this into context, the country behind us is Turkey, and Turkey has an FTE of 30,000. So we have a highly productive water science and technology community in South Africa, and we should be proud of that. So WRC will continue its role around nurturing this community of practice, around creating new knowledge, and around creating new human capital, particularly in the postgraduate frame. And in the postgraduate frame, we're no longer just talking about future academics also. We're also talking about a higher level of practice in the community. The new area for the WRC, well, it's new and old because the WRC has always done it to some degree, except now it has a much higher emphasis. It's around product development and industry development. And not to preempt what Mr. Davies is going to launch on the 8th of May, we have made some very direct contributions to the new IPAP, and we're hoping to see in that IPAP a new concentration of priority around water and sanitation issues around industry development and SMME development. So we're working on this in quite a profound way, in quite a concentrated way, in quite a directed way around organizing the research development and innovation enterprise to have a very direct impact. And the impact is associated with a concept that we have talked to the committee about before, and that is the knowledge tree. So we have six baskets of impact that we look at, and these are they. I'll remind you of them very quickly. And we organize our work around these areas. So beginning on the left-hand side and moving in a circle in a clockwise direction, we have human capital development in the science sector, as well as human capital development in the water sector, because the WRC is a bridge institution. The second is we are orienting our projects, choosing our projects, and reorienting our terms of reference so that we can have a very direct impact on local communities where this work happens. So the empowerment of communities is a very high priority. We are always looking at the opportunities for transformation and redress, and this ranges from everything from the cohorts and the transformation of the cohorts of the people who actually do the work and developing new human capital in the area, to also organizing for the kinds of business opportunities that can be created, knowledge-based business industry. Because we remain true to the 1996 declaration that was done by the government that we were moving from a resource-based economy to a knowledge-based economy in South Africa, and water must play a part in that domain, and we do very directly. We then orient our work to inform policy and decision-making, and on several occasions we have advised governments on various issues. We put out at least two ministerial briefs a month directly to the minister. We have had occasion on the request of this committee to provide some information to this committee as well around certain issues, and we'd like to do that more and more as we move into the future. The big new area, as I pointed out before, is products and services for economic development. And then the guiding principle around this is that we work in the sustainable development arena, and all the solutions that we put out will be of sustainable development character. So to break this down more specifically, so we look at each of these in turn and give you some examples. So if we look at the issue about informing policy and decision making, and I just want to talk to the examples in each of these slides because I know that you know the goal statements. Two examples that are currently at play. One is the South African Mine Water Act. This was launched during the World Water Day Summit on the 23rd, actually, of March. And this is quite groundbreaking. It's the first one of its kind in the world. It is a risk analysis of acid mine water for the whole country. And it's done on an interactive internet platform where you can go to a large level of local data detail to examine what the risk is and the kind of planning that is required in each of these areas. So either develop the water resource further or to develop the mining resource further. And on the back of this, we are also going into the space. Getting a bit ahead of myself to one of the other examples, but just to show you the continuity, is that we're moving from this to the space where we're going to, the country in the world is going to try out six new technologies demonstrated at scale to deal with acid mine water very specifically, but has the possibility of being adapted to deal with the salinity problem and salinity is a huge problem around the world. If we manage to get this right, and we're doing this with a large number of partners, including big mining partners in South Africa and a couple of international research institutes, we will then possibly be leading in the way we deal with mining water in the world. The second example that I put out there is something called WR 2012. 2012 because that's when the project started, but it's a five-year program. And this also is an interactive tool around water resources in the country. It is the country's water balance, but with very localized data and then various levels of macro data. So planning tools that are available to all people inside this. Then moving to the next one around developing new products and services. And I have another slide later that talks to this in a little bit more detail. Here I just want to emphasize two things. The first of those things is WADA. WADA is not the water in our program, and WADA is the water demonstration program we do together with government. And this time the government lead is actually the Department of Science and Technology, and a wide variety of international partners, including the Gates Foundation, and more recently WENRF in the US, the Water Environment and Reuse Foundation, which is a WRC in the US, around something they call LIFTED, we call WADA, and it's about the same kind of thing, taking very smart ideas that have been proven at laboratory scale to the science is sound, and then moving it to the next level of development so that we can shorten that space between the academic world and the real world where this is needed. The second example that I want to point out is in the area of the reinvention of the toilet. Now, we are very happy to say that we are one of the leading demonstrators in the world currently around these new technologies. We have demonstrator units right here in this city, in the city of Ekurhuleni, in Tshwane, in Ekurhuleni, and there are many small towns that are coming on stream. We were now able to organize not only the demonstration of better dry sanitation technologies, and we have some of the smartest in the world, but we now have four flush systems that can operate on half a liter of water safely in a combined water, sewage, and biogas combination that provides you a water solution with very low water, a sewage solution, as well as a small-scale energy solution. And if this takes off in a serious way, this could deal with the entire off-grid solution, not only for ourselves, but the bigger market around us is in fact just north of us, in the rest of sub-Saharan Africa and many places in the world. These are the kinds of technology that make the SDGs very real and very practical in the 2030 time frame. The third goal is human capital. And here there are many things to talk about, and the committee knows about some of this. I mean, the first is the issue of student participation. Our student participation numbers, we have been tainted by the risk of the tertiary education sector. Last year we've dropped the numbers a little bit. But in spite of having a number of 400 last year, and I'm looking ahead of myself here because these still needs to be audited, we managed to get to 495 students in the last round in spite of the difficulties in the higher education sector. So this continues to be a high priority. The second area is around the transformation of research leadership in the country. And this is a crucial matter because in the science world we continuously talk about this issue around white male dominance, around the dominance of the sector by an aging population, and all this is true. But what we've managed to do in this portfolio, and what can be very proud and helping to lead the science sector in this regard, is we now have a majority of research leaders in the WRC portfolio actually coming from the PDI. Another example is the Empowerment Fund. And the Empowerment Fund, it's something that's desperately short of money, but what it wants to do, it wants to take junior researchers and accelerate their development with short-term projects under the mentorship of senior researchers, so that you can have a real transformation of the cohort as well as an expansion of the cohort. Because 2,500 is frankly too small a number. We should be talking about 25,000. And then we also assist with very direct student support. The next goal is the goal around empowerment of communities. And here there are a variety of very interesting examples. The first one I want to emphasize is the partnership that we currently have with the African Development Bank, and the African Development Bank within which sits a thing called the African Water. has undertaken its first set of pilots with South Africa, actually, in the water research and development domain. They have no other projects in this domain, so what they're experimenting with is how this can make a difference. And currently we have two very big projects with them. One is the multi-use systems project about using the same water source for a variety of uses in a coordinated way, and the second is the rollout of the sanitation campaign. The second thing I want to emphasize is the issue of SANIC, and that's the Sanitation Innovation Challenge. And at some point, well, we will provide you with a report, but at some point we'd like to do a presentation on this because there are very, very interesting things that are coming out of this.
Where we put out a challenge on the instruction of the minister in the open press, and we got some incredibly good candidates, half of which came from the science, the conventional science sector, from the research lab and the universities, but the other half came from people who were tinkering with new solutions in their backyard. Now, they did not have the sophisticated tools, they did not have the sophisticated science, but they had some incredibly ingenious designs and inventions. And we have now been able to help one or two of them to develop those into reasonable level products with another tool that we have around our technology advisory. And this is the kind of innovation that you want to see inside the system. The next example is beyond our borders, and that's the SFRA, and this is the sanitation for Africa program, sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The South Africa leads a group of 11 sub-Saharan African countries demonstrating completely new toilet technologies at world first. And it's done incredibly well, and the next phase is already being planned. The citizen science issue we have spoken to you about before, and MiniSAS has now become a global tool. It started out as a very localized tool, it became a national tool, and now it's being used both in Europe and South America as a tool of choice for citizen science, where people are given a small set of tools that they can adapt on the things around them, and are able to monitor the water quality in their own environment on a day-to-day basis, and to collect all of this data into a national project. The transformation and research issue, and I want to emphasize two issues here. One is the issue of the diversification of the portfolio of the WRC. And you know some of this because we've spoken to you about it already. But the second is something new that we're doing, and that's around enterprise business development. And our enterprise and business development is very recent. It's been operating for about 6 months, and we've already been inundated with a series of requests and a couple of successes that we can already show to you, and I have a table a little later that talks to us. On the sustainable development solutions, I mean, we live in a world of climate change, regardless of what some administrations in the world say. We don't have a discussion about that in Southern Africa, we live it. And because of that, the issues associated with the solutions have to organize themselves around being water efficient, around being very risk smart, around climate change and adaptation, and self-standing and self-sufficient. And so the protection of our water resources is a high priority, as it is in the entire water sector, and we now have a whole range of issues that are making an impact, including three ministerial briefs that have served to advise the minister on the cabinet discussions around shale gas, for example. The issue around how we use our tools to the step further, and the next example is about something called the NASA. So the WRC does a national survey in every industry sector every 5 years. And it tells the industry three things. It says, one, this is what the global standard is around your processes, step by step. Two, this is what you currently do. And three, this is the best practice regime that you can adopt to move yourself from where you are into the best practice. And this is starting to take hold, and we have some very interesting partnerships in this regard, including the Global Water Stewardship Alliance, as well as the NBI. We then look at the issue around the equity between generations, and here we're talking about the future legacy issues, and it's not only about human capital and ensuring their pipeline into the future, but it's also about dealing with issues today in a way that solves today's problems but does not create new problems for tomorrow. And the wetlands projects are a very good example of this. This is an investment in the future water security of the country. The issues around equitable access and the issues associated with re-examining many aspects of the current policy and how our current policy is applied. The issues around environmental integration and how the lighthouse works and the connectivity between sectors. So all of the examples where we have a high resonance now internationally is the nexus between water and energy and food. And in fact, in a thing called the GWRC, the Global Water Research Coalition, which is a coalition of WRC-type organizations from around the world, the WRC is in fact leading that program in the GWRC. The issue around promoting transformation in research, I've done that, I've been in the wrong direction. These are the six baskets that I was talking about. I thought we'd emphasize very quickly what the new projects are for the round. The project portfolio as a whole is about 300 strong, it's a little bit more than that. The new projects that have started on the 1st of April are 80 in total. They have a project value over their cycles of 106 million over time. The first year budget for the new projects specifically is around 30 million. In those new projects, we already have 63% of those projects led by PDI. There are 173 students registered in each of those projects. As a total, we have a leadership in the HDI, and this is improving year by year in the most interesting way. We're now up to 25% of the new portfolio actually being led by groups in the HDI. Many of them have partners from the other institutions, but the leads come from the HDI. This is a big switch, because 5 years ago, that number was one project in 80. We're now up to close to 20. We're also very happy that we continue to keep our SMME leads intact, and it's at 31%. As far as SMME leads are concerned around R&D projects, in the entire Science Council family of the now 11 institutions, the WRC leads. The other institutions are still a little bit averse to the SMME participation. We have the good fortune of having a very strong group of SMMEs that do primarily water and environment related R&D as their primary enterprise. We are now almost at 40% on female project leaders, and we want to do a lot better than this moving ahead in time. So the kind of services that we now can talk to in this new corporate plan is a little bit different from before. We're not talking about the conventional services around being a premier knowledge hub. We will not dilute that. We will only increase that. But in addition to that, we've become much more prominent around the knowledge dissemination issue. We've now started to develop out a very concrete information services issue. As I've emphasized in some of the projects, we are now orienting those projects so that the public access to information is ready and available, and it does not have to go through a process. And this new issue around the innovation and business development is becoming part of the mainstay. I will leave the detail for when you ask the questions, because there's a lot of detail that's associated with each of these things. We'll see where we go. But the WRC also has to look at its internal portfolio, about how it organizes itself as an institution. And it is today quite different from what it was 10 or 15 years ago. So in the world of work inside the WRC, these are some of the parameters that have become very prominent in the way we operate. I mean, some of the portfolios are quite traditional, around dealing with the human resources issues, the facilities issues. But we've given much more emphasis now around corporate governance frame and how we orient the work and the teams of the WRC. It is fair to say that the minority of people in the WRC belong only to one team. The majority of people are in a core team and also participate very actively in secondary and tertiary teams around them. We now have a very good corporate social responsibility model. And we have very good projects on the ground in which we have not invested a penny. What we do is we have a formula of offering the knowledge base and the researcher base, and we together with the private sector partner who signs the check jointly does each of these projects. And it's starting to work very well. In fact, we have really, really good interest in some of the very big players who want to get away from their traditional corporate social responsibility activities more longer term, much more sustainable. So we're starting to do some very interesting work in this domain. And then our information technology platform has become very sophisticated, as it has to be, because in another discussion in the Science and Technology Committee yesterday morning, people were talking about the fourth industrial revolution as if it is something in the future. We live it. We live it now. Our data dependency in our daily lives is huge, absolutely huge. So organizing the management of big data is primary, and so we have a very big emphasis of that inside the WRC. This talks to, in a summary, the toolbox that we use around work that we do, and I won't get into that in any detail because it's described in the corporate plan itself, but suffice to say that we're no longer only looking at the conventional tools. We are now looking at the very unconventional tools around the way we work, things that work very well in other sectors, and we are quite sure that they're going to work for us. For example, the WRC is now investing in campaigns where it did not invest before. The innovations portfolio, you know about, the portfolio review is something that happens much more frequently. We are moving into the world of demonstrations and pilots, but I have to say that while the demonstrations and pilots are usually attractive, mitigate the risk rapidly for investors. The problem with it is it's very expensive. So an average demo project for us costs the equivalent of 10 research projects. So it's a big challenge. So we're finding partners that are interested, but the need is very high. And hopefully what happens in the way the IPAP is launched, it would invite a lot more people in the water sanitation sector to do the kinds of things that we're doing already in the energy sector, for example. And if we come to that level of numbers, then I think we can make a very, very big difference, both in the South African and the global domain. Then, Chair, the next couple of slides that you have is the performance plan itself. And I do not want to go through the rows, because you've had this in advance, but if there's anything in here you want me to emphasize, I'm very happy to do so, so I'll be advised by you. But if you're right, I'm just going to glance over them and go to the next set of slides. And there are the issues around the financial portfolio, and if we want to talk to the numbers just a little bit for you, I'm just going to hand over to the CFO to talk to the next two or so slides, just give you a feeling of how we're looking at the next 5 years. And then after that, I'm going to tell you about some of the issues that we're discussing together with the department around future financial sustainability.
Thank you. Morning, Chair. Morning, board members. From an income point of view, we have similar challenges to most organizations involved in research and development. What we have done is our primary source of income remains levy income, which is funded from water users. However, more and more we're emphasizing leverage money, which is where we partner with others internationally, locally, and that's to a large extent to fund impact. And you'll notice that it's about 25% in that order that is funded in that fashion. And that's for impact. And a lot of what we do is geared towards that. Maybe just the next slide there. Again, there on the expenditure, 65% or so of our expenditure goes to research and development. Human resources is another big component. We are primarily, human capital is a big part of what we do, being the service, services primarily. Next one. That's just a diagrammatic representation of what I just said now. You can go to the next one. That's some of the detail expenditure and the line items that we have there. Just showing there that our business at this point in time is about 300 million, growing to about 380 over the next 5 years. Not much to say, about 200 million or so is spent on R&D. And a big part there of our leverage income, you can see, is about 75 million, growing to close to 95 million in the next 5 years. I think that's it.
Do you want to emphasize on this point? Is that we think this is the conservative view, because there are many possibilities for the dramatically. But we have to be cautious about something, because the space available for the increase in budgets is not going to be from the levy. I mean, our outlook, and if the committee has a different view, we'd love to hear it. Our view is that there will be only marginal increases in the levy, and in real terms, probably no increase at all when you match it against inflation. And the inflation numbers in the WRC game is not the CPI. It actually is the science inflation numbers. And given that we are an import economy, not only on scientific equipment, but also on all of the consumables associated with the scientific enterprise, we are at risk. You emphasized this point yesterday yourself, Chair, that we're not having a sufficient movement on local manufacture in these domains. The net result is the inflation number that we talk about, and this comes from some work that the ex-president of the South African Academy of Science has done, Professor Robin Crewe. That number is closer to 20%. That is the kind of year-on-year inflation that we look at in the scientific domain. And this is related to the import prices themselves, as well as the currency fluctuations, because we buy equipment in dollars, we do not buy them in rand. So the development of a South African industry around research equipment and research reagents and research consumables will definitely put us in a different part of the game. But the thing I wanted to emphasize around that is we think the levy is going to be constant. We have huge opportunities to get partner funding around the contract work. But you have to maintain a healthy ratio with that. Because what the levy funding says is that that is the percentage that is completely determined by the public sector. We decide as a general. Once you start working with partners with their funding, then it's something that you mutually have to negotiate. And sometimes you're doing a little less of your priority than you want to do. And there are institutions in South Africa that have already gone down that slope. So we've got to be very wary of that. So is it possible for 380 to become 500 million or 600 million in that 5-year period? It is possible. But we have to be very guarded around our strategy. The Chair, I just want to emphasize a few more things before I close. I won't go through this slide because we talked about this. I want to talk about this tool and what it has been able to do. Now, the Water Advisory Protocol, and I know, Chair, you know about this because you've been dealing with some of our public inquiries about this, and we thank you for that. Just for the member of the committee, is that the public has learned that there are many places to complain to the WRC about. So if you don't get the answers you want from the WRC, you can also go to the chair of the portfolio group. Because you know they have to respond to his request immediately. But this tool was introduced now for only a year, and it's starting to work quite well. What we have put out to the public is that when you have an idea for industrialization and you have a product of some sort, or even when you're considering buying a license from somebody and locking yourself into a 20-year deal around something you think is going to be usable, you can come to the WRC and the WRC will test out this thing for you. And it will give you an opinion on the scientific soundness of what you're looking at. I can't tell you whether or not you're going to have a successful business. That depends on many other things. But I can tell you, yes, this is scientifically sound, you can go with it, or no, this is bogus. Or yes, this is a good idea, but you still have 5 levels of development to do before you can actually use it. And so we've been in the space, and we've now created a water advisory unit. I mean, currently, this is at no charge. In the future, we may have to recoup some of the expenses, because the numbers are getting quite large. And what we do is that we get a group of experts in that domain to offer the scientific view, examining this. We then give out an advisory note as the product to the people who make the submission, but we also give them an opportunity to get a head start in some of the WRC programs like WASIS. So if you have a really good product, and you have no development partners, and you need a space to demonstrate it, and you think it's scientifically sound, then we create that space where this can happen. So what has happened recently is that we have had a large number of applications, but we've also had a large number of inquiries from people who have been approached by people, and they now come to the WRC, and typically it's the municipalities, to say, This is what we've approached with. Is this something we should look at? So we're getting referrals not only from the people who are developing the product, but also for the people who potentially have been fired. So this is a snapshot of the advisory basket now, and why were we really encouraged by it? You know, we've had 48 applications. And out of those 48 applications, and these are completely new technologies, out of those 48 applications, 20 have organized themselves to scan questionnaires. That doesn't mean that 28 have been dropped, but some have been rebundled in ways because people thought they had two things when they actually had one thing, and it needed to be combined. And out of those 20, we have already issued 16 of the advisory notes. But here's the story. Out of that 16, 11 we have deemed as potentially viable technology. Now this is pretty good. And none have been referred back to the R&D, so for the folk who brought their stuff to us, have actually done the R&D already. And I know they need to go to the next step. And only a few of them are already established and only require technical evaluation. A large number of them are genuinely new to the market. Now, in the table on the right-hand side, it's a little bit difficult to read, I apologize, are those ones that we have looked at. And what you can see and what I want to emphasize is that the majority of them by far emanate from South Africa. In fact, there are only three where people were actually buying licenses on products from elsewhere. In this case, Australia, the US, and China. But the majority actually is being developed inside South Africa. This really looks good for the future. It must look good for the future. Because this is something upon which the committee was talking to this point a lot yesterday. What are the building blocks of the economic transformation you're talking about? Well, here's one of them. Here's a domain where we can actually lead globally from the basis of innovation and new technologies inside the market. So we're really encouraged by what we're able to see around. The second thing that I want to emphasize to you as part of my conclusion is that in some domains we are in fact doing the whole value chain, the entire innovation value chain. So the mind model risk is a good example of this. What started off in the WRC as primarily a research portfolio, what is the risk and what is the extent of the risk, and we've done a lot of work on that over a long period of time, went into the domain of characterization of the risk, then the development of technology to deal with it. Last month, or well, 2 months now, we launched MindWater Atlas. We're working on the demonstration of these six technologies, and maybe the next step is you're going to have viable South African businesses that sell acid mine water rehabilitation technology to the world. Because here's the story. Every mining country in the world has high mine water risk. No country in the world has reasonable enough solutions around it. None. So here is an interesting space where out of an R&D portfolio we have potentially developed the possibility of a viable export market for South African technologies, and we're very excited about that. So just before I close up, it's useful to remind you of the things that are highest in our risk register, and this is the high inherent risks. We think we have a lot of this under control, mitigated under our control measures. Our biggest risk, and I've emphasized this a few points before, is around research expertise and capacity. We have highly productive people in our research force in the water sector. There is just no room to maneuver. You know, Turkey loses 100 researchers because they decide that they're going to do the next part of work in Singapore, they will be fine. Their position will not change. If we lose 100, huge knock. Growing this community of practice is absolutely critical. The second is that this community of practice is primarily in the science and engineering sector. It's not in law, it's not in psychology, it's not in the social sciences in general, and this is something that we need to expect. The next issue is keeping up with the trend of the cutting edge of water and sanitation research in the world, and there's a lot going on. In fact, the scope of study on the rates of increase in publications in the water sector says that water research publications have increased at a rate of 30% per year over the last 10 years. The world is busy with new work in the water and sanitation domain. So keeping up with those trends, keeping at the cutting edge, has become a job in its own right. It's an important job, but it does represent risk. The issue of maintaining institutional and country competitive edge is always there. You know, you're in the top 20 of the index. You're a focus point. You're a goal for other countries. You become a target for them. One of their targets is, well, can we bypass South Africa? Which means your productivity has to be high all of the time. This is not a bad thing. It's a good thing, but it's a real risk. The issue about research knowledge uptake and impact, I've said to you that there's a good movement, a very positive movement around getting much more of this, but in general, it's not happening. And it's not, certainly not happening enough. South African industry, when it's desperate, does resort. In general, it rather uses solutions somebody else has used. And you can see it in the profiling of institutions. So the institutions that have very intensive research investment as part of their competitive edge generally do a lot better than others. You know, and there are South African giants in this domain. For example, De Beers or Sasol. But the general uptake of the industrial space isn't in this domain. And hopefully the IPAP will make a difference to this. The uncertainty in the South African tertiary education sector is very real. And it affects our projects intimately. I mean, last year, at least 20% of the postgrads that are on WRC projects have to complete their work in other laboratories other than their universities. Now, 20% you can make a contingency plan. If that number becomes 50%, you can't. So, certainty and stability in the tertiary sector is certainly an issue, and it does affect the enterprise. And then, financial stability is something that we have to always keep our eye on. But yet, we believe that if the mind can conceive it, then the heart can believe it, and indeed we shall achieve it, and that comes from a really great bank. So on that note, I'd like to thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, thank you very much, and I do a very important submission, I must say. Anything that is to do with research and development. It talks to the heart of what a country can or cannot do. Your statisticians, they talk about measuring and managing what. How does it go? Manage what?
No.
That's a different one. I'm talking about the statisticians. They talk about managing what you can. How does it work? Manage what you can measure, or measure what you cannot, what you can manage. Something is that effect. So that's what basically your research and development talks about. The very important areas of work that you are that you continue to do. What I want us to do, members, let's carry on with what we have just received now, and then come back later with the informative suit. I'm touched, and I'm trying to find the balance between the training that you continue to do, linked to the targets of your national development plan. But in your latter point that you're raising very critical point about the uncertainty from a higher education point of view, insofar as achieving what you want to achieve with a number of your research work and some of your students that you produce. So there seems to be a dealing of sort, hence your struggling efforts
we are able to achieve your national development plan targets, especially from a skills-based point of view is concerned. And linked to that was a direct question that related to our ability as a government to say to education institutions, produce X number of engineers, X number of accountants, X number of economists, in order to fix our family. And the response I got was that you cannot tell this institution. But in India, they produce 1 million IT specialists per annum. To an extent, they even export those. But at the same time, government subsidizes these institutions in a very big way. But we cannot dictate. Hence the point I'm raising to myself, that if we cannot afford to do this, all your targets and your vision 2030, you might as well just kiss them goodbye. So we're still struggling with today. The number of accidents that you can produce. I mean, just recently we had a stadium that had to be constructed over a certain period of time. Number of those accidents had to be imported. And how much more is improved of water and sanitation. And also, what we are told is that a number of those that are there are almost on a retirement stage. Whether we are keeping up with the demand, for me, is a big question. And I'm not sure if you can comment on that. Let's just get to hear what Mr. Faber has to say.
Thanks, Chief. I will enjoy WRC's presentation. I think I have a personal interest in it. Thank you. Finally, really interesting. Chair, just to start by saying the chair of the board started with the comments on the bucket system. I'll call it the bucket system in Dalian. I can assure you it does work. It's not my own technology. I do it here in the Acacia Park at the house that I'm staying in. I have a bath about this size. I paid 60 rand for it at the local market. I put it in the shower. It traps all the water in there. When I have the shower, I use it to flush the toilet. I have another bowl that I use in the sink when I wash the dishes, and I use that to water all my pot plants outside, and I can send you pictures of them, they're flourishing. So the simplest thing, and it's about what Mr. Niger said, about conscientizing the people, about how they use water. We can have the most advanced technology in the world, but if we don't conscientize people about how they are using the water, and what they are using it for, we're wasting our time. And I think the billboards up on all the freeways as we drive all over the city of Cape Town, they update you every single day on how much water is left in the city. And I see that when you sit in the traffic, I saw it yesterday, big glaring letters telling me how many days water is left. And it does, it sinks in, definitely does. 12 days, yesterday it said 12 days of water. 12% the day, but 12%, yes, 86 days. So conscientizing the people. And I know people, other people in the city who are using the bucket system. It definitely works. Anyway, that's besides the point. I'm very keen to know more about WADR, the mine water asset. I think that's something that we should be briefed on specifically, Chair, given the whole the concerns raised about AMD. Presentation on that on its own would be quite beneficial to the committee. And Mr. Nader mentioned I've made quite a few notes here, maybe I should put my glasses on. Yes, I was keen to know, linked to the ESM multi atlas, the role that WRC played in the development of the EIA reports that the department uses for the granting of the water use licenses specifically to the mining industry. I'm very concerned that some licenses have been granted in protected areas. Funny enough, Kumatu is going to present just now. Two of the areas I'm concerned about currently are actually in their area. One is in Buckerstrom, in a wetlands area, it's a protected area, and yet the water use license has been granted there. So, Chair, just to put that on the radar. Yeah, so the role that you guys are playing in advisory capacity, or how does it work? Because why I'm raising that, Chair, is that the Protected Areas Act actually only stipulates the Department of Mineral Resources and the Environment Minister in my comments from them, but not from the Water Minister, which is strange. So we need to look at that piece of legislation because it directly impacts on our water sources in those areas where those licenses are. So if we could give that some attention as well. And then the water energy forward basis that you mentioned, I'm very interested in that as well. I've mentioned it in the committee previously. I watched a documentary a while back on very innovative, well, not farming, it's food production methods that they use in Europe particularly, where they basically got a huge warehouse and they've got vertical farming, it's food producing, it's not farming. And you know, how close are we in South Africa to moving towards that in the agricultural sector, given our shortage of water and the volume that they can produce in that method as opposed to fields and fields of farms or whatever is being grown. And then water leak technology, water leak detection technology. I've seen quite a few demonstrations on different products. There seems to be quite a bit that's out there in the field. How widely are we actually using this in South Africa? And gee, I ask this as well because I think water leak is one of our biggest problems in this department. And I know it could be quite costly. A lot of this technology is quite costly. But surely as we are now producing new infrastructure or investing in new infrastructure, we should also be investing in some of this water leak detection, especially on our bulk lines. Because if you, a lot of the time we're not aware of these leaks. It could be a costly thing, but surely it would save us a lot in the water resource and financially in the long run. So how are you working with the department with that? And at the water summit in March, the emphasis there was on the reuse of wastewater. I know there's a lot of opposition, especially in South Africa, to drinking the wastewater. We've got some examples in the country of plants here in the Western Cape, for example, where that water is 100% safe to drink. But how much are we doing in that field? Are we doing enough, or is there still that huge gap that or how are we bridging that huge gap to make sure that we can use more of our wastewater for various... that's it for now, Chief.
Okay, Mr. Ngul, follow up with that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. When I was perusing through your document, I was thrilled from page 33 to 40 or 40 plus when you indicated your future plans of how you want to ensure that innovations come to life. I was very keen. If those innovations can come to life, hey, South Africa can move in that direction to save water and air. In the other side, I did not see anything. You know, everything is industrialized. I did not see anything where you are talking in townships or in towns. Stories. You know, agriculture and stories.
stories, one building becomes a farm. Just one building becomes the entire farm that can be intentionally removed. And also, I have not seen how we do the research to ensure that ecological system in river, you know, most rivers now are dead. You can hardly hear a frog now. You know, in the past I would go out there and sleep near the river. You see, just guarding myself not to be eaten by crocodiles. But make sure that I hear a frog. You see, it was distressing in one way or the other. But today, go to a river. You can't hear it. What research are we doing to ensure that ecosystem is maintained? You know, during our rainy season, we forget that we don't have food. Now these dams around Kumala, the other part of it, now dams are full. Put dams are full. I have heard that even in Limpopo, they are about 50 or 60% full in Limpopo. Now that no one is talking about drought. And no one is daring to make a research. Because now we're with the rainy season. During the return of it, what kind of research can we do to contain the storm draining water that it does not flow to the sea? No one is talking about it. In all the chapters, in all reports, I have noted since I came here, that in all the reports, you know, when government takes over, or the government, you know, wants to prosper, it comes with a policy. Ours now, there have been so many as it's like here in the life. Now we have NDP, National Development Bank. But when you look at most of these, the annual plans, there seems to be forgetting in indicating how do they want to assist the government to reach all goals. In terms of the National Development Plan, I think we have made one of the statements there, in terms of skills and then the like. And in terms of keeping water, you know, I think one in the SDP in our policy says we must build as more small dams as possible. That's what it says. But what are we doing? Do we have anything research to ensure that all places have a small dam in there? This must be coupled with the, I don't know whether I'm calling it nicely, the medium-term strategic framework. You couple with the proposal because you must, the NDP, there should be a program that ensures that we move them. That is the medium-term. You understand? There's a plan that is broader, but there are plans which is called the medium-term. How do we ensure that this goes there? I don't see that in most of our entities. Also, I have noted the issue of mothers. I like this report. We have often mothers with the TSC. I'm happy that you are doing it. But it mostly uses biochemical, if I'm talking about it. But it starts with bio, something like that. Yeah, I remember, even if I read it, time I But the prospect, because you can have as many students, I think we have mentioned before, many students coming up. What are the prospects of being employed or coming up with their own company to ensure that the students do not loiter? During the water week, I was very clear. I saw so many companies there in Chepele, around the internet. There were so many companies with many innovations, very powerful innovations, including yours, Mr. Nigeria. But do you find it hard to come together with those companies so that you can share the innovations? You know, in one of the I have seen the rainwater harvesting there. A tank built next to the wall. You cannot even see that the wall of the house. You know, it's very beautiful spot. It's built around the wall of the house. The water is only used for maybe
Thank you, Shepherd.
Programs do you have that shall take us in that direction in the shortest possible way in dealing with this budget system in this country, both new and old. Number three, very simple, straightforward question. At what point will you be supplying this member of parliament with publications and periodicals? And how often are those going to be supplied to this member of parliament, those publications and periodicals? The last one is about your training strategy. That you train in a number of these fundis. How many of those are you able to retain over a period of time? And what incentives does research institution like yourself have such that it retains those trades? And perhaps a very important one to me, close to my heart, with regards to climate change. Its impact is known with droughts and with floods. Adaptation and mitigation strategies are very key. I would have imagined a close link with the department, especially those that deal with planning. What collaboration can we hear from Water Research Commission? We shall have to follow up on the one that talks about protected areas that our researcher, I would imagine Mr. Manu Fula is making note on that one. We need to make a follow-up on that one. Thank you.
Before you close, can I just, she mentioned...
And your name is Mahara.
Mahara. spoke about the advisory capacity to the department and the minister. I think one of the indicators is there, the number of policy briefs. And I remember you just mentioning it now and a couple of that question. One of our first sittings in this committee, I had asked that question on the role that the WRC played in advising the ministry on the drought that was to come. And they agreed that yes, they actually did. But the gap was in the advisory capacity and what actually happened. So obviously there was a gap. So I'm keen to know, if I look at these indicators, it says the target was 14, the number of ministerial briefs that were produced, the contents of some of those briefs, what role does the WRC play, what are those briefs all about? Is it exactly what we are talking about? And then on an extremely light note, I have a young niece, her name is Zahira Ali, she's a mechanical engineering student at UCT first year. She hasn't started, expect that she's going to specialize in, so I'm sure her father will be very grateful for the bursary.
To ensure the protection of the resource. And we have to, of course,
monitor and police the adherence to those conditions. But it's something that the protected areas legislation is under the jurisdiction of the Department of Environmental Affairs. But you will appreciate when license is granted, it follows that the authorization is granted for mining by the DMR, and subsequently the authorization was granted, environmental authorization was granted by the Department of Environmental Affairs. The question of doing the catchment management strategy, it is a specific requirement that the CMAs must have a catchment management strategy. And the CMAs have taken the route of appointing a professional service provider to do that particular work, because the focus is more on the strategy and not so much on the research. Regarding the legislation, the Water Research Amendment Bill is still to be dealt with by this committee. We did the amendments in the fourth administration, and we have to set aside some time to deal with it. I have indicated that it is priority, and essentially that amendment bill is about addressing the changing the commission into a council, and about improving governance and accountability, etc. But we will appreciate that the main priority of the department is also the consolidation of the National Water Act with the Water Services Act, which is the important. But I think we will have to find time to deal with the Water Research Amendment Bill. Then on the Archibius Court Dam interventions, the WRC assisted the department in doing an external review of their RTS and MedC program, now which was dealing with cutting off the hyacinth and of course the algae. But the solution that we have or that we're looking on basically is a different solution in terms of a sort of more permanent solution in terms of trying to use these new technology of pods, etc., to destroy the hyacinth and the algae. But that is still in process with the department. But Mr. Naidu can comment on that because he is a fan or was in a meeting where that presentation was done by that particular company. But the company has not yet been appointed to go ahead with that. But in the meantime, we are working for water to try and cut the hyacinth, and we're looking at other solutions to address that problem. I think the Archies is a concern, the dam and the algae and the hyacinth is a huge concern, because now we read in newspapers about people being trapped and families being trapped and boats being trapped, but we are looking at all options, and one of the challenges is to have the funding, to raise the funding for a comprehensive solution to deal with the Arctic problem. In addition to dealing with the actual dam, we also have to upscale our enforcement operations upstream, deal with the malfunctioning wastewater treatment plants, etc., Maribeng and others. And I think that's essentially where I'm going to stop, and then the chairperson and the WRC can come in on the other aspects. Thank you.
Thank you very much for very insightful questions from the chair and the members of the portfolio committee. My first response is WRC is a research organization to provide solutions, but it does not have the Sector regulation has continued to be
had a WRFD chairperson. She's also an independent researcher that does this kind of analysis. And it gives us a very interesting view. I mean, just to emphasize the point further, in the Southern African world that we're doing with the Gates Foundation, the highest level of resistance around the movement to technology, and it wouldn't surprise you, is South Africa. The other 10 countries needed no marketing campaign, they needed no motivation campaign. The case was made fairly clear, the absorption is very quick. Their limitation is that they don't have enough funds to roll it out. And we've been discussing this matter, it's a really important matter, Chair. It's not to put the department on the spot. We've been discussing this matter at length with the folk in the Ministry of Science, because we find the same phenomenon in very many things. And one of the issues in the South African environment is the lock-in. You know, we use waterborne sewage because it's what we know how to manage. We have a regulatory platform around it, there is a supply chain around it, and all of those issues. So some of the places in the world where we're seeing how this change can be made are places like China and India. In fact, if you want to see where the new South African sanitation technologies are working and scary, you have to go to India and China. Where they've dealt with a lot of issues, they've been very robust around the change in policy, and they're going to see huge success out of it. And I mean, I had another presentation where I can show you just some of the things that they're currently doing. I mean, to give you an example, I mean, China has decided on one project around the change of public sanitation facilities in their cities. Upfront, $286 million project is running. If you go to the India Swachh Bharat program, it is called, it has an online monitor, and as you're watching it, you see the numbers changing in front of you around the implementation.
But where is the system coming from?
Well, I'm not sure it's resistant, because I don't think the policy says the wrong thing. I mean, the policy has the right menu options. There is no insistence on the movement. And then, let me tell you about the regulatory framework. In the South African regulatory framework as we currently sit, non-waterborne sanitation is in fact illegal, yes. So all of those cities that are currently doing WRC demonstrating, like the city of Ethiopia, have had to pass special bylaws to have demonstrated. So I mean, these issues have to be dealt with in a very fundamental way, because we have created our own traps around these issues, because the people who have the discretion on changing it is ourselves. You know, it's a self-regulating market. This matter is not unique to us. The extent that we've gone to around these new sanitation products, for example, is that as an international consortium, we've actually given up on the local national bureaus to define the standards. So ourselves in the US and Singapore are now leading a movement to create a new ISO standard for waterless sanitation. So people don't have to worry about their national standard anymore, because you now have an international ISO standard to overtake that. But these are the implementation barriers, even when you have really excellent technological solutions. And it is an area where South Africa can lead. It's an area where the minister has been keen to lead. I mean, she was the keynote speaker in the largest sanitation conference in the world held to date, and that was in Chennai in India in February this year, where she stated this publicly at Epicentre 4, that South Africa wants to be one of the leading countries in this domain. And so we're empowering it with the research that we have. There is a lot of will in this regard, but it requires a lot of investment. So one of our big challenges around rolling out this new sanitation is that even with the demonstrator units that we have, we're importing them. We're getting them from elsewhere. We're giving the designs to a large company in China, who are then building these units and sending it back to us. I mean, they're not charging us a premium, because they're also in the research area. But unless we start developing these manufacturing lines ourselves, we can't have these scales changes that we want to see inside the system. Secondly, in the context of the sustainable development goals, the global market for these new products are in the realm of billions. Because there's a huge need in two-thirds of the world. Two-thirds find 1% of that, surely that's viable enough for an industry basis. But sure, I want to get ahead of what Minister Davies is going to talk about on the 8th of May, because he's addressing some of these matters in the new ICA. And hopefully that becomes a point of stimulus to get a range of other things too. But sure, let me respond to the issue you said. But let me begin with a note of gratitude. I mean, I always leave this committee very encouraged, but with a longer list of things to do. I guess that's your performance indicator about how much more work you create. But you really encourage us in the direction that we're going, and we're very grateful for that. Just to address some of the issues that you've raised, and for some of them, I think we will have to send you some documentation and come back and talk about some things in more detail. So I'm going to cherry pick a bit, but starting with your opening comments here about this issue that Mr. Indemani spoke to you about not being able to direct the system around the skills that you need, is a very big issue. And we've heard this in many platforms in many areas. Even when the National HRD Council chooses a direction, there is a resistance inside the system. And restricting the autonomy of institutions is important, but there are places in the world that have gone past that barrier. You know, one example of that, there are many examples. But one example that comes to mind very quickly is Australia, and what was called the BAA initiative, which is kind of a funny acronym for Australia. It's called Backing Australia's Ability, where there was directed funding from the Commonwealth government that says, you can do anything you want, but if you want our money, then this is what you can do. So as a university, of course you have the freedom to do whatever you want with your strategy. But the parcel that we're giving to you, we're buying these services, we want these skills, and we want it over this period of time. It is a discussion that must happen. And then relating that to another question that was raised around what is our coverage, I think Muni raised that. We are covering all of the universities currently, every single one of them, including the two new ones, in Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. The area that we have not been able to make a dent is actually the students. And in that regard, the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training is actually assisting together with EWCITA and getting some of our toolboxes into that. Because we've developed curricula, for example, around extension work and the creation of paraprofessional exceptions. And while we, as an academic institution related to an academic center, know what the mechanisms are in the traditional universities, we don't really know what the mechanisms are. But I think if you ask us this question again next year, we'd have a better answer for you, because we would have had that penetration, because it's absolutely crucial. It's critically important. Then just to run through some of the issues. I mean, the issue around the contractualizing of the agency, I really like the explanation you gave around the bucket, because it is exactly that. It doesn't matter how much of water you actually catch in that bucket, but for the rest of the day, you're thinking about water, because that's the first thing you've done in the morning. And it's not going to be. In everything you do, everywhere you're going, it's going to sit there. And that's really crucial. But we also understand that behavior change has to be quite subtle. So one of the experiments we have with a new tool, and one of our partners experimenting with this in the city of Cape Town, is that we've attached behavior statistics onto boats. You already have, wherever you come from, in your boat, what your use was for the last month. I don't know if you look at it, it's on page 2. You should look at it, it's really important. Yeah? Now, what we're doing in this new experiment, we're not only telling you about what you're doing, we're saying to you what your ranking is in your neighborhood. And no one wants to be at the bottom of the list of anything. So we tell you what your number is. What we should tell you who number one is. But we say where you are in the ranking, and already we're seeing a shift in the behavior patterns. Because people want to be somewhere else. So these are the kind of more subtle things that don't need new technology, that don't need new science solutions, that are actually going to make the major shift in science. And then related to that, one of our more powerful tools in the country as a whole has indeed become our schools program, the Mini SAS program. And this is the tool where you actually count the number of frogs, Mr. Goody, to give you the health of a roof. Yeah? It's very interesting too. We'd like to take, we took the deputy minister to one of these projects, and she actually got inside the room. I didn't expect her to do it, but she did. When you go, you put all these kochas out of the sediment, and the number of kochas that you have actually tells you what they have in the system. It's a very simple tool. But the power of the schools program is not only that the schools are empowered to do it, and they use this as part of their curriculum to teach science, etc., but they take that discussion home. And then they start influencing the people in their communities. And this is how you start building up the consciousness inside the system. On the waiver and the minor and the presentation, we'd love to talk to you about it, because there's hugely interesting things to happen. But let me headline something. In September this year, we will have the biannual WRC symposium. And we would really like the members of the committee to come and participate in that symposium, because we will be having all the players that you're talking about inside the symposium, including the international players and private sector players and the various other government department players in addition to our own. And maybe make a request to you right now, if I may, that one of the things that we have done in the previous one is we've had a two-hour session exclusively for the portfolio committee, where the portfolio committee met in that environment, outside Parliament, it met with the water community. And the discussion was really rich. And I think that everyone got something out of it that was very positive. So, Chair, if it is possible for the parliamentary committee to consider something like that, we would be very happy to set it up. Because people on the other side are asking about the political barriers. You want to know how the implementation will run out. If everyone is in that same conversation, maybe we can organize for those bridges to happen fairly quickly. So please consider that. I will repeat that in a letter to the committee to remind you about that. But one of the things that we're going to launch there is the first global hub of something called LiftLink. Lift is currently the most powerful waiver program in the world, and it's run out of the US, out of a thing called WESTEC. And they have chosen the WRC to be their first global hub around this. And this is a platform where we organize a much higher scale of that table that I've talked to you about, with a range of support tools. We will also be launching it at that event in September, and we would be delighted if you were there, because it will also give you a chance to interact with some of the international people working inside this space. And I think it will be good for all of us. On the issues of strategy for the department around the EIAs and around the legislative reform process, etc., I mean, the WRC in some places has a very direct role, and we're invited to be a participant. But the WRC projects always have a role, because we research many aspects of those very same things, and those reports are used. They're used quite a lot around informing the nature of the debate, around informing the cornerstones of the policy. In some cases, we write them directly, like the research and innovation chapter of the NWRF, but the work that we do is supposed to inform everything else that happens inside the strategy. I mean, this is why the WRC exists as a public institution. And the consultants that do the EIA also use the WRC work quite extensively. So the WRC as an institution does have a measure of influence, but its influence is about informing people of what the latest thinking is in a particular domain. But as the chairperson has pointed out, you know, research provides the knowledge, and then people take that and various other things into consideration to make the decisions that they do. On the issue around this year and around wastewater and wastewater reuse, I mean, this is a very big issue in the world. I mean, the countries that sit at the top end of this, like Singapore and Germany, claim to reuse every dock that leaves their wastewater treatment plant 7 times as a minimum before it is returned to stream. And of course, you can do it for a lot more than that. I cannot even speculate as to what the average is in South Africa. I imagine maybe 2, more likely to be 1. But the issue about reuse, and reuse in a graduated way, is something I've been working on for a long time. In 2 domains, one is the drain water domain, and the safe reuse. If your plants are growing better after you shower, rather than direct irrigation, then you're also supplying them fertilizer and stuff. They may be a very good competitor. But some of the things that we're looking at under the context of a very big project called Water Sensitive Design is exactly what the thing Guri referred to, and that's around urban agriculture. You know, we have the possibility, and the leaders in this domain is our colleagues in Australia, the CRC in Melbourne, because Melbourne is now a big demonstrator of this in the world. We have the possibility of organizing for a net positive water footprint coming out of the city. Can you imagine? I mean, currently, the water footprint of the city is way beyond demand. We can actually organize a scenario where the city becomes an introducer of water for the capital. Because if you have the right kind of design around it, it's possible. And there are places in the world that are actually starting to do this now. And the urban agriculture issue is a very big part of that. The issue around water, energy, food nexus, this advertising again in September, is one of the big workshops we're going to be having for the GWRC in that event in September, is the water, energy, food nexus. There's some very interesting things that have happened around the world. There are some very interesting experiments. We do have demonstrated inside in Southern. You know, 2 kilometers from where I live, there is one of these places. And we're doing some work around analyzing how they're doing it. But it's looking positive already. It's essentially a hydroponic farm. And next to it, there's a restaurant that's developing that is going to be claiming that it's going to get all of their produce only from this place. We have the technological need to do it. We have a wastewater treatment plant supply for a hydroponic farm in both the West that currently supplies Woolies with Bellage. Maybe you can start doing other things as well. So what we have in South Africa, and we've had for a long time, in water and many other areas, we produce some of the best candidates for new solutions anywhere in the world. Done it over and over again. What we fail to do is to scale that to an industrial level so that we can get net benefits of the economy. I mean, we've talked to this committee before about the reverse osmosis membrane, which is currently the master class in wastewater treatment anywhere in the world. It started in the WRC. That's where the technology started. And we have all these things mushrooming up. We really need to start catching them and moving them out to scale. And the reality is the people who supply these solutions elsewhere in the world do it best on marketing their ability to show how people can use it right where they are. The issue associated with leak detection technologies, we have really great leak detection technologies. But we now have technologies where using satellite images fairly accurate leak detection. There is a cost factor involved in it, and there are some companies who are currently operating in South Africa with an upfront capitalization model. So they will come in, they will do the leak detection, and they will get a percentage of return on the efficiency. We're assisting with the technology around that, and maybe this is the way to go. But you can see very clearly that why we work with wildland municipalities to do exactly this. Because, you know, on those old numbers, they're now 2012 numbers, the loss of the system on the non-revenue water was 7.2 billion rand. In 2017 numbers, it was probably about 10. So making an investment in one to get back 10 makes a lot of sense. And this is something that we have to do. But we're doing it intelligently, because, I mean, once you know the nature of the problem you have, one of the options is to fix the leak. The other option is to do things like intelligent pressure regulation, where your investment is a lot less. Fairly similar results. So we will continue to work in this domain. The issue around people getting after a drought is a very serious issue. I mean, we now call it post-drought amnesia. And one of the really wise things the department has done after this drought is in many areas where the drought is broken, it is actually organized to advise the city not to remove the road. The city of Tshwane has not removed this restriction. The city of Eswatini has not removed this restriction. The problem is people switch instantly. In fact, when it starts raining where you are, and the city of Cape Town is is they've top sliced part of their budget and they make it available to their big clients to experiment with new innovation. And stormwater reclamation is one of those. And it will yield results. It will definitely yield results. But it will yield results, but only in the water security domain. Because one of the phenomena that we have published from the WRC is there's a massive change in the rainfall pattern in South Africa. The overall average rainfall is roughly the same, but it's not spread out over a season. You have short, intense rainfall, and the infrastructure is not built to deal with it. You know, we've got flooding in some parts of the world, the huge potholes problems associated with it. So managing the stormwater not only organizes to give you get better water security, it also organizes you to get longevity into your infrastructure. So the issue around the support to municipalities, I think this is really important. We were assisting with something. We have a partnership with CELDA called the Municipal Benchmarking Initiative. And the Municipal Benchmarking Initiative is an exercise that we do every 2 years about organizing together with things like the Blue Drop Report and the Green Drop Report and the No Drop Report, but in addition to that, several other parameters, having a lead table of how the cities and towns in South Africa perform against themselves over a period of time. And then there's a masterclass concept around sharing experiences and so forth to improve the performance. But now we're extending that even further into organizing to support the content of their IDPs. Because this is where it comes. If it's not in your IDP, you cannot make the investment around something new. And we have the kind of uptake that's now starting to be encouraging. So the issue of employment opportunities for water professionals, the WRC is working with a number of players in this regard. Now, our latest partner is the EWC Tower. And we have some plans to launch a pretty big initiative later on in the year. But what we have already is something that is produced every year called Water at Work. And Water at Work is a manual, a very popular manual from the WRC that gets sucked up into all of these exhibitions and fairs around universities and the private sector, including individuals. It describes the various possibilities that currently exist for water professionals. And we want to expand that list rapidly over time, there are many possibilities in this regard. Around the issue of African collaboration, a very important question. I mean, the SRFA program, the sanitation program, is something that we have with the different countries. But in addition to that, we are currently working with AMCOM in the context of the broader African agenda. And in several countries bilaterally, including the Sudan, we will sign an MOU with Kenya's KEWI, the Kenyan Water Institute, later this year. We will sign with Namibia, in fact, at the symposium. We're now organizing to formalize the relationship to start getting two things to happen. One is joint projects, and the second is having an African platform around the knowledge sharing. And one of the things the minister asked for at the launch of the Mining Water Act is whether it was to organize for an African Mining Water Act. And this is something we're taking up with the AMCOM Secretariat to see exactly what it would take to do that. Already the African Development Bank is interested in the funding partner, but there's complexity around data and data station, etc. But the issue around developing our water science in Africa is that. So the issue around desalination is a very interesting one. In the previous discussion, we invited the portfolio committee to go and see a very interesting experiment down the road from here, where we have a desalination plant in Zanzibar operating on wave power. And it's quite successful. It provides a very small amount of clean water to a local community, but it shows you what is possible with a very simple device. And this device is being developed in a much more rigorous way now. We've got partners like TIA and the IGC involved that might go to scale. But what we are pushing is exactly this issue, because the current problem with desalination is the high energy cost. So we now have a demonstrator in Limsola. We want to have a much bigger demonstrator in a place called Kite in the Northern Cape, that's going to feed into a solar farm, so we can do the technology itself. Robots are supposed to be technology is not cheap. It's really good, but it's not cheap. So a group of people actually led by Iran are now experimenting with what they call new D-cell, which actually is very old D-cell. What it is essentially is condensation. You boil up the water and you collect the steam, clean water. And they're starting to organize that to happen at scale. And if it works out well enough, that may become very cost effective. And for a country like South Africa, there's no real solution around the coast. Because we have many, many brackish aquifers in the country. And those brackish aquifers, if you have this kind of cost, immediately you can be out in the fresh water. Right? To also Katana's question about the student breakdown, we'll give you a lot more detail. I don't have the stats at hand, but the rough ratio is about 70% urban, 30% rural. But I'd rather we give you a more detailed report around that, because the issue that we have around that is that we're counting it out on the basis of the location of the institution where they registered. I think it's important to know where they come from, and I think we'll pick up on Mary, you asked a range of very important questions. I think the department talked to the issue around the CMA strategy and the legislative reform and the master plan and the Water Research Act to some degree. I'll put it on the table a little bit. The WRC is and must always be available to have a higher level. It's a public resource. It should answer the questions that you need, and it will always be available to do that. On the issue of the financial stability, well, the key issue is that at this point in time, because of the unique funding formula of the WRC, it remains in the past 3 years the only science council in the country that has not had a budget. That's because it doesn't get a pharmacy grant. So we are in a space where science investment is getting a little squeezed. I mean, we have a target of a 1.5% spending. We're currently at 0.75% of GDP. We have a long way to go in this domain. And in that way, we have to be very smart around our strategy to maintain the financial stability that we currently have. And I think we have a robust enough strategy for now. And we'll see how we expand it. But the key issue is what I raised yesterday, that when it keeps this ratio between what you completely control as a public sector and what you can't control because you're in partnership with someone else at a higher ratio, and it has to be over 60%, you've got to have control over more than 60% of your budget. Otherwise you become exclusively a contracting agent and you can't answer the questions that you want. But we will continue to work on it, including engaging new partners, non-traditional partners, private sector has become a big player in that strategy, and together with the DSC Corp, we're working on experimenting with a water and sanitation portfolio as part of the foundation strategy from the Lady Pandora. On the issue of the wet risk register, in fact, when we said in 2017, water has been one of the top 5 risks now for 6 years straight. And it's unlikely that it's going to drop out of that top 5 list for a long time to come. It is a global concern of extreme proportion. And a lot of our work is oriented around mitigating that. In several ways. One is increasing the supply options. But secondly, also engaging the demand side options. Because it is possible for us to be more efficient. I told you before in this committee that South Africa is the 30th driest country in the world. The average water use for the world is 177 liters per person per day. And not for your personal use, but you take all of the use in your system and you divide by your population. You would think that as the 30th driest country in the world, you would be well below that. We are at 235 liters per person per day. We are wasting, in spite of being really, really scared. So we have to continuously work on this. And then there are big industry and trade questions involved. You know, Europe is having discussion quite intensely now about whether or not it exports water, whether or not it exports energy. And the same is true around the spirit. So I'd rather that we check those statistics and we'll send you a response on that to tell you where we're at. The issue here that you have raised, I mean, the Harvest Project is a complex project. It really is. I mean, there's a dependency, there are a series of issues associated with the dam, there are issues associated with being in the end of the catchment, there are issues associated with being part of Johannesburg's wastewater stream, and it's a complex area of that. And you know, the simplest solution is to clean it up before it gets into the crocodile, but that's not so easy. There are issues around the development around the dam itself. I mean, several of those states are actually in the surface. And technically, it's illegal. Pekin Woods, Gulf of State. Half of people in Pekin Woods, Gulf of State, within the 120-year floodline. Silver can help write the right term. So a complex array of factors have happened over the last 100 or so years that has given us the heart disease. In fact, one of the options that was raised in one of the workshops is, can we put down the dam wall and build another dam? Because the dam wasn't originally designed as a storage dam. It was originally designed as a hydroelectric dam for a very different purpose in a very different space of time. So the complexities associated with parties are immense. But here's the thing. If we manage to get the right sequence of factors that will improve parties, I think we can crack any impoundment in the country, because nowhere is as complex as the heart. And the aeration technology that you referred to is an interesting experiment. I'm not quite sure what the overall efficacy is going to be over time, but I believe that there is a plan to first demonstrate it at small scale and test it out, and you know what modifications you have. I've tried it in my fish pond at home, actually, as well. Well, there will be fish for them. But sure, the Hali will continue to be one of the important projects for a reasonable period of time. The issue about reporting and the publications, Father Chick, you remind me of this frequently, and every time you try to get a report about it, we will write back that, we will write back that very soon. We have sent some material, but nowhere near as frequently as I think we should, and we must. And we are a resource. On the issue of climate change, the larger concentration of our work is around adaptation. We do some work on mitigation, and we're part of global dialogues on mitigation, but for Africa, for sub-Saharan Africa in particular, adaptation is a big challenge. And we have some very interesting work in this way. I mean, we're one of the first countries in the world that has a water atlas associated with climate change impact, and it's really helping the planet in several areas. We're now developing these off-grid combined water energy solutions, which are organizing to increase the percentage of use of renewables inside the system that will run the ground. Our water, places like the Water Stewardship Alliance, is demonstrating that reducing your water budget in an average industrial operation has a concomitant decrease in savings in energy budget, which has a concomitant decrease in your carbon budget. So these are nicely interlinked, and we will have to see where it goes. But there is a challenge. The part of the challenge is that the NDP, as it currently sits, is highly water intensive, and it's also carbon intensive. So finding new ways in achieving those same ends is something that we're all collectively working quite hard on. And some of the challenges that pitches out of this all of the time is how you organize that data. You know, there are certain things that you have to do in the short term because there are some immediate problems to get, but you need to do it in a way that doesn't give you a long-term higher carbon budget than you currently do. And South Africa is in the spotlight. South Africa has one of the highest per capita carbon budgets in the world because our population is not that large. And that's something that we have to pay attention to. But the solutions that are coming out of this around the vulnerability atlases, around the interventions, around rainwater harvesting, etc., are looking very, very positive indeed. I'm sure I skipped one or two things, but maybe the last point that I want to make is this, that the issue of storage, as we have demonstrated ourselves, as we have seen with our neighbors, as we've seen the best practices around the is not only about the large storage scheme, not only about the large dams, not only about the medium-sized dams, it's also about the storage that you have in every building and location in the country. Every one of us needs to have a rainwater harvesting tank. If we can combine what we do into a neighborhood so that we have a larger underground system where we can put things into so that we eliminate the evaporation, we can be better. That is what water conscious nations do, and that is where we should be moving to. So, Charles.
Yeah, I see the noise levels with our neighbors here, they really make our lives unbearable. I'm even thinking that after lunch, if we can go back to our original venue, which is the old assembly. Otherwise, we run the risk of not being able to hear each other. Mr. Chauvin?
Last almost from 1940s, 60s, in fact, that was
today where they are sitting, they know everything about their water. It's a scarce water country, but they know they are in detail. So even the development of technology is informed by the challenges that that country has. We are almost the same, as you say, that we are the, one of the countries in the world that they really struggle with this sort of water. And therefore technology becomes quite very critical. I don't even pick up any commitment with regard to budget. That the state, neither the state or the department, helping this particular entity to be well off when it comes to issues of resources. All of these things that you have just mentioned, of the work that you want to do, there's a budgetary constraint. You may not even achieve what you want to achieve. And it's a fact, but we are not able to say it yet. Because if you there will still be with a small budget that they have given you. But just talk to us. We are politicians. We are lawmakers. So talk to us, inform us exactly as to what are the issues. Frank and honest. And I think this will help us here so that we are able to locate where the problem is at the level of the legislature, what intervention that is required from our side. The department is trying to deliver the best of this, but the challenge that we are going through, you may miss one of the most important entities that we have that will help you to be able to move and solve the problems of water and water sanitation. Thank you.
Mr.
Pasa?
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
I just would like to add to my colleague, using Israel as an example, we are in a formal meeting with some of the ambassador of Israel. And he indicated to us that in Israel, he used an example like oranges. They are not allowed to produce oranges in Israel because they don't want to export water. So my question to you is, are you involved, and I know it's more an agricultural issue, but if we look at the Western Cape, you know, we produce a lot of, there's a lot of fruit produced in this province that uses a lot of water as well. Now, we don't want to kill the industry, but developing new cultures of that using less water, are we looking at that, or is that merely the function of agriculture?
Okay, maybe just one last one from my side. It's a very simple one. In all the new infrastructure that department gets involved in, talking about leakages that are currently a figure of 37% in Tauchet, do we have any kept maintenance plan? Because one of the major problems that we have currently, so to speak, of course the infrastructure is old, of course, you know, we're talking about asbestos, but the fact that we did not have a plan to put together maintenance. I mean, we have countries like Cuba that have been having their infrastructure for donkey years with sanctions by America and whereabouts. But they continue to provide quality service. This is one example where in here the issue of maintenance has to be strictly adhered to for us to be able to say, yes, we now have a quality water service that people can be able to drink and live longer. Do we have such in place such so that we don't go back to where we are today, moving forward? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would like to see all respond in connection with the question on the relationship dynamics between the WFC and the department, because that
in the abroad and who's the candidate?
Commissioner.
Right. So therefore, the presidency cannot determine the level of view. The political responsibility of this entity lies in the council. Has the question is directed to the council. If you cannot avoid the relationship at that level, then there's not a relationship. And that's my question. So we're going to respond on the basis of having this council and how does this council relate to the decision. And then the rest of the, what I want to hear is that it's very important. That's for example, at the operational level, I like it, and you can talk the whole thing, I know that. That is very important. But this one is very important because if that relationship does not exist, there's no need to have it as an entity that supports it.
So it is work in progress. There is no expectation from the WRC that the department will agree with everything we say. I mean, what we offer is a science opinion on issues. We do not pretend that the only parameter that's taken into consideration for a decision is the science. There are many things that are taken into consideration. But we also know that our responsibility is to make sure that the science is heard and is known, and we will continuously work on that. One of the things that we do appeal for a lot, and maybe it is being very demanding, is in those projects, because for every WRC project we have a reference group. And the reference group meets several times during the course of the project and are very close to the progress and its outcomes. That those projects usually have the best opportunities for implementation because the buy-in and the investment in their knowledge is there very early. Now, it would be ideal if it was possible to have departmental participation in all of these reference groups. And there are many reasons why it isn't possible. But that would be something that we want to have more of. The second thing around that is that we have a fairly robust process around the alignment of strategy. And in fact, in the way our corporate plan is expressed, it organizes itself to express itself on how it contributes to the departmental strategy as well. But we want to give more meaning to that. So it would be useful if there was more engagement, I think. The issue around budget support, there are times when the WRC does things on its own accord, own budget to support the work of the department, but usually that fits into the strategy of the WRC itself. Would it be better to get more finances? It always is. But it also depends on what is needed at a point in time. So from where I sit, and you're right, I mean my sitting is at an executive level rather than a political level. I don't see a discord or a necessary obstacle. We have great appreciation for the access that we have to the executing authority. And that conversation happens quite frequently. So we are able to advise on a large range of issues. But yes, it would be even better if we were able to work much closer with the shareholder department. The issue that you raised around Papua and the borehole is an issue around the country. There are things that happen in the context of the response to the drought that would have happened better if the knowledge that was available at that time in those areas was used, for sure. And borehole is a very important example of that. But also there has to be an understanding that some people were acting in complete desperation at a point in time. Things were very hard. And on the back of that, we have modified our strategy to make those kinds of tools much more accessible to people. I mean, eventually the WR1 2012 tool will have that kind of information on tap, if you'll excuse the pun, to advise on those decisions. I've answered you as far as I can on your question. Perhaps it would be useful to have a more detailed discussion on that. Mr. Bussell, your question around agriculture, we do a lot of agriculture work. I mean, 70% of the agriculture water research in the country is sponsored by the WRC. And we have a very interesting track record. I mean, South Africa has some of the best irrigation practices in the world. We also have some of the worst. And the issue with the export market is that the efficiency is high because it's driven by the external factors, because all of the guys who export are actually examined by those markets in some detail. And yet there is a discussion around the issue of virtual water around the export. I mean, I had mentioned the example of India and the rice, you mentioned the example of Israel and the oranges, and there are more complex examples even beyond agriculture, like BMWs being manufactured and exported from South Africa because it also takes a lot of water. So but there's a big cost-benefit discussion that has to happen around that. It's not a direct and simplistic issue. And something that we contribute to, but even with the places that do it, I mean, they have to continuously revisit that discussion. But one of the things that we've been managing to do in the agricultural domain that potentially is going to make a very big change is the use of wastewater around the irrigation of food crops. And if we do manage to crack this and get the right kind of efficacy and safety standards around them, we could in fact start moving towards that NDP goal in a much more significant way. Chair, the issue of maintenance that you raised is absolutely paramount. I too have been to places, most recently to Canada, where the backup system for the city of Ottawa is a piping system that's more than 120 years old. And because of the level of its maintenance, they have that level of recognition and trust in that system. And when we talk about this issue in the WRC, and the Minister has also done this in some of their presentations, we're not talking about new infrastructure, we're talking about well-maintained infrastructure, because new doesn't necessarily mean well-maintained, and old doesn't necessarily mean falling apart. And this is something that has been done. It is mentioned in the NWRS too. There is a lot of work happening in the context of the War on Leaks program as one of the pioneer programs to crack the national, I mean the non-revenue water issue. And there is also a set of maintenance indicators, infrastructure maintenance indicators in the municipal benchmarking initiative that I spoke about earlier. It is one of the subsets of the league table, where the cities are now measuring themselves around the maintenance of infrastructure. And we've now got a little bit of a trend analysis to tell us where this is going. And I think maybe we should compose that into an intermediate report for the committee to tell you where it is. But whether or not there's going to be a maintenance program at a national level is a question best answered by the department. Thanks, Chair.
Mr. No, Chair, just to, from the response that we have received, it's quite very disappointing. I'm not just in the phonetic, it's written proper. That you're dealing with frustration where there's not much buy-in, and you're not able to say it, by the way, openly. Using a wonderful technique of trying to avoid speech, the truth. It's not a bad thing, it's okay, because I really understand it, it seems that there are competing ideas and knowledge systems around the issues of water. But what the council said in this meeting, Chair, the relationship is good with the minister. We are happy she comes, she opens our conference and all of that. That's not fair. That is not fair. What was going to be fair was going to be speak to your mandate. What is your mandate? Your mandate is got nothing to do much with the relationship with the minister. That's not the mandate. In the act, I don't see it anywhere. Where it says that the role of the council is to have a good relationship with the minister, who must come and open conference, or have coffee and muffins or something. It's not the money. Now, you know, Chair, what we definitely want to hear will be how do you deal with this challenge? That the work that you do does not find much expression in the department. How do you deal with it? You may want at some point the council to give us a report and just to tell us in line with what has been raised by the CEO here. He talks of challenges. He says there's going to be a mainstream or going to identify a sector that we're going. There's no plan there. Maybe we will have to give us a plan. And that plan will have to be approved coming from the council. That this is now the approach, that it's a new approach and it's not here, even in the strategy now moving forward, it's not there. You may want to do that. Because what the committee will definitely try and assist will be how we force this relationship with the department. As I said earlier, that the department is facing challenges itself, but I believe very strongly that
You are a wonderful resource for 12 years from you. The issue of goals may take it this way. Money that has been spent, in fact, in unused goals, billions and billions, have gone into in a desperate situation that there's drought. I said earlier that some of these things is nothing else but business now. That those who are just making money because I run a gold company, I can go to a department, I'm informed, no information, department just approved and give me 100 million rand to go and get gold in the first stage. That's what has happened. 100 million rand. So that 100 million rand would have been better served under the cancer to help us identify where water is. So that by the time we launch a ball, we accurately know where it was. So it's not happening in the first place. You know? So I'm saying therefore, Chair, that it's clear that there are issues. I mean, from where I'm sitting, Chair. But they're not bad issues. It's not like in a negative way. But the issue would be that the department must work very close with yourself to help the department to preserve this knowledge. This would definitely, even if you would Chair, earlier when you spoke, you use one cap and you throw another cap, but in the cap that you throw in first, is a cap that you say that has virtue. Around issues of police and all of that, you know. And I think in the coffee drinking with the minister, I don't expect you to raise those things there. Raise those issues here in the committee. Tell us whether the issues that we have identified as a stumbling block for us to be able to move forward. Tell us that, give us that information. In that small analysis of a report form that you can give us on issues that need to be attended to. Because once you touch policy, you touch legislation. And that's our domain. And that's the work that we do here. We're not here just to come and listen to you. When we are here, we listen to you, and then we then say, these are the weaknesses, therefore there's a need for the following policies to be put in place. You know, that's why we're engaging with yourself. So I'm saying, therefore, Chair, that let us, from my side, and what we sort of do in the future, that let us get all those issues that are sort of non-collaboration, where you don't find much joy around the work that you do. I mean, we cannot have technology that we produce here, and somewhere in the world, people are enjoying it. In South Africa, yet it cannot be used because of some kind of something. What are the problems? Give us those issues so that we help you to unlock those issues. If it's policies, legislation, you have to talk to us. You know, so that we can then advise whatever that says advocates things together with the department doing before the committee, we can then engage on the issues of these things and then go out and make proper legislation that speaks to these issues. I thank you very much because without yourself, we will not have this bank of knowledge, we will not have this capacity to know about what kind of country. Without yourself. Because everyone will just run around. Because you are the foundation of our water resource in the country. So you know, that's my comment, Chair. And I'm not saying it in a bad way. I know that some of us will speak, people will just conclude their moves against this man against it. No. But the issue is, how do we build, in the last 23 years, what systems have we built around the issue of water that we can be proud of? That moving forward in the next 100 years, moving forward, we have laid the same foundation. So that's my take. Thank you.
In fact, I can safely say it is the same that we have two major projects expected out of the department to unfold, not knowing where the other one is currently. And we've been raising the issue about the standards as they relate to pricing. I'm reminded by what Mr. Chawe is raising to a point where we certainly did raise a concern, Doc. A concern that to a point where we even inquired and we even engaged with the department as to the dissemination of any cost of any borehole? Because we've got varying scenarios. And an example was given, responses, you know, very strippingly raising issues of conditions, depending, you know, as to where you drill that ball, conditions will dictate. If it is going to be a very rocky area, there you are undoubtedly going to be expected to have these engineers, you know, doing all the studies, and by the time you're through, hence the price then shoot up. We were getting, because we were dealing with the drought, everything. It is when that you really got to hear of these interventions. That are number one, emergency based. Number two, you know, boreholes, you know, are your boreholes, it's the playground, you know, for those players who are involved. It's a paved playground. In not only in this department, I must say. I mean, we're going to talk about social development, we're going to be talking about NGOs, we're going to be talking about rural development, we're going to be talking about a number of departments, agriculture. Everyone, you know, knows that if you want to make some quick buck, the route to go boreholes. So people make money there, but standardization of all of those does not come by. That's the first point. I don't know the department whether the program is still coming or it is gone already. Because we would have insisted, I would imagine speaking here on behalf of all of us, we would have insisted that that program must not go on now until you resolve the issues that relate to the standards. Because you can't just waste money like that. This is public debt. Number two is sanitation. Yes, we have a policy on sanitation now. But again, this is another area. To a point where, you know, in one area, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in Bloemfontein, you would get a toilet worth about 100,000 rand, or 30,000 rand, I can't remember that for figure. How much? 75,000 rand. Just one toilet unit. It's like a Rolls Royce toilet unit. I would imagine those that you have somewhere in Korea, you sit and then everything happens. It's warm, you know, you just press and then everything, you know, happens on its own. And then all what you do, you simply just stand up and walk away. No effort at all. I would imagine that type of toilet would be the one that would really cost that much. But the point I'm raising is that these two are your cash cows. Everyone wants to come up with some quick bump sanitation. Everyone proposes quick bump. Perhaps we should really be able to say, let there be no such projects that must go on or forward until the standardization set in place and norms. Otherwise, it continues to be wastage, unabated. If you can get that briefing with it from the department by next week on Tuesday, as to where the processes are, just as to on boreholes and also on sanitation, and whether we have been able to look into this matter of standards being set for the department before you go out there in the public domain. If any feedback that you can get from the department on those specific ones.
add to this request that you made. It strikes me that a lot of the sanitation issues also lies in the human settlement department, because they're the ones who are actually building the homes. We were mostly sitting with the bucket eradication program and the bulk infrastructure, isn't it? The internal reticulation, the actual toilet, that's human settlement, that's not us. But what I'm keen to hear is what kind of, and we've mentioned it before, intergovernmental, interdepartmental relationships exist, and what kind of discussions are taking place where new human settlements are taking place. Are the rainwater tanks and is the new technology and the new toilet systems being integrated into those new human settlements? That's where we need to focus.
Okay. It's a clear and straightforward. Okay, Chair.
Thank you very much, especially for the member concerned about the relationship between WLC and the department. Honorable Chalky, okay, you're interested. Well, I mean, for me, fortunately, I used to work for the Water Research Commission. So I'll just give a historic perspective, which I think has been lost because of people being overcommitted. In the past, it was the requirement that for every project, one, we involve the department in recommending proposals to be funded to make sure that what we fund was in line with what the department needed. And then the second point was what Leo has already mentioned, that the reference group that WLC put together to manage the project, the department was represented, and the people took it seriously to attend all the meetings, so that when you complete a project, the department knew what information is available and how they can use it to improve implementation. I think the weakness has happened in that lesson. That's why the people are overcommitted and they don't prioritize this WRC reference group. And then the connection between research and implementation has been weakened.
And the committee have raised an important issue. It's a good stimulus for us. I mean, I've been having these discussions with the new Director General also, and we are starting to talk about some mechanisms. And I think we'll be very happy to give you a report in the next little while once we have concluded that. Because there are some easy solutions to it. And I think we can do it. And we have a DG who's quite willing to engage it. Because it's also been part of his observation. So thanks for raising this thing. It does give us the focus. It also gives us an important citation to prioritize this. And we will come back to you.
To an extent, whether it is by design that when you are going to have your corporate plan linked to the question raised by Mr. Chalky, you don't then have any need to include your principles as you pull together such an important document. For you to be able to talk about ownership, department owns this at the end. Yes, somewhat within the document, you do have your organogram there that talks about how you are structured and reporting lines and those. But in terms of the actual ownership, where you're going to have your minister, your deputy minister, DG having to have some forward of sort. I'm not sure whether that's generally how it is done. I do know for that even in some of your annual reports, there are some instances where you don't include, I'm not particularly referring to you per se, some entities still continue as if they are all by themselves, an entity independent of whoever else. But somewhat within the document, we do read the organogram that talks up until your minister in terms of your own accountability or reporting lines. Whether that is part of the concern raised by Mr. Chaufey, those are the kind of, you know, limited, because at the end of the day, when you have anybody else outside of all of us here making contact with this document, that there has to be clarity on simple, straightforward issues. Where are the reporting lines connecting to? And just by reading first, second, third page, you get a sense about the location of this entity. As you speak now, it is on its own. I don't know whether I'm making sense.
Quickly respond. I think what you're raising is the issue of the objects, and I think you're right. I mean, we pay a lot of attention to that
issue of
the optics, about what you actually see. We do pay attention to that in the annual report. I think that we have erred in not paying attention to that in the way the corporate plan is presented. But I want to give the assurance to the committee that what you see there is the approved draft from the minister, and it's the third draft that goes via the departments. In fact, it is the minister who tabled both the ABP and the corporate plan to Parliament. We present it, but it has already been tabled by the minister herself. And I think that we should have taken more care to have that acknowledgement up front, because you are right. You can't rely on people just knowing this because it's been said. It should be there and very clearly in writing. We will correct that going into the future. I also want to point out that we have substantive input from the department into the strategy. And we have responses on each of those drafts. So it's not stand alone. Should the relationship be a lot closer? Yes, it will be best if it was. But there's a reasonable amount of cooperation. But there are many things that we do need to notch up a level. The third thing that I want to raise, you know, the issue that you raised about the standards, it's really critical. It's absolutely critical. We have it in some areas, and we don't have it in other areas. I mean, the issue of having the kind of geographical information to make the right kind of decision simply has to be there. And we've got some irons in the fire that will help us to get into that direction. But yes, I just want to reiterate that last point. You've given us a lot of food for thought, and lack of opportunity to have that engagement with the shareholder department and come back to you with a comprehensive report to say that this is what we've identified, this is what we think we're going to do, and this is where we really need your assistance. And I'm sure that you will assist. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, there is lunch served, members. I just thought about to read just one message that I got from a lady that we went to visit in Fred Madibe. Her name is Trika Kruger. Not Kruger. Kruger. She says her name is Trika Kruger from what is referred to as Upcake Pathway, if you remember. I just again want to thank you for your intervention with the chrome spray in Madibeng. It is still clean and we enjoy fresh air daily. and then it's fish in the water. So this is part of what we intervened on. I just thought, let's pat ourselves on the back just once more. We don't even get any such patents. No, we are in a thankless job. So when somebody thanks you, we need to thank you. We don't have a department to thank us. We don't have... Eh? We are in a thankless job. We are in a job where there is no security of tenure. You can be dismissed any day. You don't have any labor court, no CCMA, no union. We are in that kind of a job. I call it peace job. We have lunch. Where is Martin? We have lunch expected for 12:30. We should go out. Some of us might wish to jump to the memorial service. And we'll be back here, say, at 1:30. Then we deal with the Nkoma Tutsutu. We are dismissed for a short while. We expected that. Oh yes, we memorial service is finishing at 2. What do you do? You come back here or wait for 2:00 and still hold assembly. Hold assembly is only finishing at 2. We have that option of coming back here. Okay, we're coming back here. Thank you. Well, we just wait for lunch and then we're expected to get out as well.